Yelton, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a Tuesday mailbag edition of the Utopia. I try to do this to you guys all the time. There we go. I don't know why these knobs change. It's just the microphone sitting right there. It's like a microphone ghost. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610, and it is a Tuesday edition, mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. Lots to get into in the aftermath of this Jaguars game. Looking ahead to the Bills game, of course, there will be a preview episode later this week, Thursday, Friday timeframe, where I'll give you my keys to that game, six-pack style. But in the meantime, quick administrative reminders to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. If the mailbag is any indicator as to the popularity or the growing listenership of this podcast, then things are growing, because I got so many questions to the mailbag for this week. It was bananas. So if yours didn't make it in, my apologies, but we get more and more and more every week. Some of you regulars to the mailbag continue to come up with really good questions. So, but keep sending them, man. I love reading them. I love the commentary. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Again, if you're new to the podcast, hit the subscribe button so you don't have to worry about seeking it out or having a friend send it to you or whatnot. If you want to hit me with a rating or a review as well, that would be really cool. And again, today's a mailbag episode. So HOU mailbag@gmail.com, HOU mailbag@gmail.com is the email address. We're going to get into the mailbag in just a second. As far as things going on with the Texans, as of today, it's the Tuesday, it's a day off. I would say the injury news, probably the biggest stuff. Christian Harris will not be back this week. I have no clue what the severity is of Christian Harris's injury, other than to say that he has practiced for a total of about 20 minutes since the beginning of training camp at the nighttime practice after the Pittsburgh game. When they got back and practiced on Sunday evening, he practiced for like a half an hour and then was back in the building, and we have not seen him since. He's on IR. He's not coming back this week. It's unfortunate. This was to be a big year for Christian Harris, and I suppose it still can be. We're only 4 weeks in. But thank God that Henry Toa Toa has taken a step forward as a player here in 2024. Toa Toa has been a very unsung hero, just based on the expectation coming into the season or coming into training camp as to how he would be used. He was thought to be the third linebacker. He's had to be bumped up in the rotation because of no Christian Harris. So there's that. I saw Will Kunkel from Fox tweet that it's expected that Tank Dell will be back this weekend. I would imagine Joe Mixon will be back this weekend as well. He practiced on Friday before the Jacksonville game, and then the team decided to hold off, maybe thinking they could go another week, kind of play the middle on the whole thing. And, hey, we could probably beat Jacksonville with just Cam Akers and Dario Gumbawale. They were right, barely, but it worked out. So having Joe Mixon and Tank Dell healthy and back in the lineup this Sunday is imperative. They're going to need all hands on deck offensively, because I think this thing could turn into a real shootout. So we'll get into the Buffalo game as far as like keys and predictions and things like that a little bit later in the week. So without further ado, let's jump into the mailbag and talk about our 3-1, 2-0 in the AFC South, Houston Texans. Sorry, I'm pulling up the document here with all of y'all's questions in it. All right, let's see. Start off, Ryan from the Shug. You're batting leadoff, buddy. And it's not even a Texans question. He's leading off with, can we big poppy Yordan Alvarez? In other words, just have him lumber around gently as a DH RBI machine, singles and home runs, like you said, Sean, make big poppy great again. You guys know my feelings on Yordan if you listen to Payne and Pendergast. I don't need him sliding into bases. I don't need him sliding into walls. I don't need him to own a mitt. I just need him, yes, singles, maybe ground rule doubles. That's cool if he wants to jog into second on a ground rule double, and home runs. That's it. That's it. That's going to be enough to make the Hall of Fame someday. But I don't need Yordan. I'm being somewhat facetious with this. But I definitely don't need him sliding into second base when there's no threat of him being tagged out. But the good news is, as of about an hour ago, Yordan Alvarez will be batting second and DHing for the Astros in game one of the wild card round in about 2 hours from now. I'm recording this in the 11 o'clock hour live from my apartment. So, yeah, that would be great. Just bubble wrap Yordan Alvarez other than base hits and home runs. I'm with you on that. As far as Ryan has an actual football question, what do you think is a bigger key to the game against the Bills? Texans rushing for 4+ yards per carry, in other words, rushing efficiency, sacking Josh Allen 3 times, QB pressure, Texans discipline, under 7 penalties. God, it's so sad that we've got to put a number at under 7 penalties. 7's bad. 12 is brutal. I'll put it this way. I think they can commit 7 penalties and win this game. I don't think they can commit 12 penalties and win this game. I think of all those things, I think they can win the game without really running the ball great. I think having Joe Mixon back is gonna help. I think pressuring Josh Allen, to me, that's the biggest key, is Josh Allen, his ability to throw on the run accurately. Keeping him in the pocket if you can is real key. But this is a, you know, if you listen to the pregame show on Sports Radio 610, we do a little thing with John McClain and Jonathan Alexander when Jonathan represents a Chronicle on the road games. We have McClain come on during the home games for the last, you know, one of the last segments there. We do a thing called player upgrade. And that would be mine for this week, is the pass rush has to step up against Josh Allen and the Bills. Allen has shown in the past, if you put pressure on him, he'll make poor decisions. Like, he'll turn the ball over. He'll cough it up. So I think that to me is the biggest thing, pressuring Josh Allen, keeping him in the pocket. And I think through doing that, he's going to give you a couple during that game. So that to me is the biggest key. Thanks, Ryan. We have a second Ryan. We got two Ryans right out of the chute. Ryan Lynn says, based on where Trevor Lawrence was drafted, is it safe to say he is a bust? I don't think the book is totally written. Like, to me, bust is something that's final. He is trending in that direction, unquestionably, though. He is the reason the Texans won that game on Sunday. Missing wide open guys, accuracy issues. I don't know how much confidence the team probably has in him at this point, and he's so overpaid. Like, that's the most ridiculous part of all of it, is Jacksonville felt compelled to give him a 5-year, $275 million deal. What a fucking stupid organization. Seriously. Like, just dumb. Just dumb. And they say dumb things and they do dumb things and they're dumb. And I'm glad they're in our division. They will never scare me ever, 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 the Jacksonville Jaguars. Zero. Ryan also says, I know Laremy Tunsil needs to pull his head out. How much responsibility, if any, do you put on Chris Strauser? I'm not at practice every day and watching, you know, and obviously a lot of the coaching with the O-line at this point goes on behind the scenes. I am surprised how little heat Chris Strauser is getting, though. It seems like most of the heat for the O-line play, the non-penalty stuff is getting put on Slowick's plate, and the penalty stuff seems to be getting put on D'Amico's plate. I'm surprised how little heat Chris Strauser is getting. I wonder how many Texan fans would be able to tell you who the offensive line coach is. Like, the average fan, the people, you know, walking around the stadium on game day would be able to name who the Texans O-line coach is. Whereas I felt like during the O'Brien era, everybody knew who Mike Devlin was because the O-line was not good. He managed to stick around here forever. O'Brien thought Devlin hung the moon. So, yeah, I don't know how much of it is his responsibility, Ryan. I just know that he ain't getting a ton of heat for it right now, and I'm kind of waiting for that to happen. Neil is in Liverpool, global podcast listener. Love it. Well, it's been another undisciplined shit show. This is Neil talking, not me, although I would concur with that sentiment. We only managed to beat the awful Jags because of Nico and a hard-nosed defense. At what point do we need to be concerned about the coaching here? It's not the O-line false starting or holding. It's the punt. If it's not the O-line false starting or holding, it's Steven Sims fumbling and then getting benched for giving away a brainless 15-yard penalty. I can't remember such a lack of discipline from a Texans team as we've seen in the past few weeks. Is this a coaching issue? Still loving the pod. Great work, my friend. Neil, I appreciate it. Of course it's a coaching issue, because D'Amico Ryans has to fix it. Like, ultimately everything that goes poorly with a team is a coaching issue, in that if it results in enough losses, guess who's getting fired? The coach. So I, you know, I, like, as far as D'Amico goes, you know, Steven Sims, should we have expected him to cut Steven Sims this week over this? Are they a better team? That's what you always have to ask yourself. Are they a better team with this guy or without this guy? It's just been, yeah, it's been a crazy lack of discipline. And I don't know if it's because D'Amico, who pounds this stuff into the heads of these guys, if the message just isn't getting through, or if particularly on the O-line, these guys just aren't as good as we thought they were, or as talented as we thought they were. I'm not concerned about the coaching. That would be a little silly to me. I think D'Amico Ryans is an excellent coach. This is just a weird stretch that they're going through here right now that's got to get fixed. I don't it's a coaching issue in that it's his responsibility. I don't think D'Amico Ryans is a bad coach or that he coaches this stuff poorly. At some point, it comes back on the players. Like when I heard D'Amico going, yeah, you know, we had all these false starts after the Minnesota game, and that's on me. Like, no, it's not. Laremy Tunsil's an adult. Stop jumping off sides. Appreciate the email, Neil. All right, JR and Spicewood. Love the show. Listen to everything that you put out. Thank you, JR. This is at best a mediocre team with a great QB receiver connection. They are undisciplined and at times aloof and unaware of the situation. This is the biggest surprise of D'Amico's early head coaching career. I would agree with that. This stretch of penalties over the last three games might be the biggest surprise of the D'Amico Ryans era. In fact, JR, I'm writing that down as a topic for tomorrow. Biggest surprise. Where do the penalties rank up? All right. Sorry, guys. You get to kind of see how the sausage is made a little bit. Dude, I come up with topics when I wake up at 1 a.m. sometimes and I write them down. So that's just how it goes. JR continuing, I don't know how you fix this issue without making someone an example. We knew LT's issues. Who knew LT's issues would be contagious for the entire offensive line? Fucking ridiculous and unprofessional. End email. JR, I appreciate the email. I'm just going to back up because there's a point where you get penalty talk fatigue, and I'm probably reaching that. I'm probably getting close to that. There's only so many emails I can answer where it's like, what's the problem with the penalties? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing? I don't know. I just know they keep fucking doing it. So I, you know, whatever it is to get it fixed until I am notified otherwise, it's not working. So I share your frustration. I just don't have the answers as to what the fix would be. What I will say is that as I've read the first three or four emails, and they've largely been negative in tone with the Texans, and I understand it. I went on a rant on the preview episode for the Jags game saying they got to put the foot on the throat of these guys. I mean, I was pissed when I started thinking about how many shitty teams they let hang around in games over the last year and a half. And yet they're 10-3 in one score games, I think is the number now under D'Amico Ryans. So it's a delicate balance because here's the thing. If the Chiefs had lost one of their first four games and they came close to losing a few of them, if they lost just one of them, the Texans are the number one seed in the AFC right now. As it is, they're the number two seed in the AFC. So we're talking about a chunk of season whose body of work is good enough to where the Texans would be guaranteed two home games in the playoffs. You know, and that's never happened before. So not the hardest patch of their schedule. I get that. And the one loss they had, they got blown off the field. But so many of these things are fixable. You know, like if they were 3-1 with a negative point differential and it was because they lacked talent or they had to muck it together with Brian Hoyer at quarterback or something, then I would be probably just a lot more reserved and resigned to our fate here. But I look around the league and there's a lot of teams that are 1-3 and 2-2 that have aspirations similar to the Texans. So that's, I guess that would be my whole thing. So JR, I don't have an answer to your question, and any of the other emails that I cut and pasted into my document here that have, why do they keep jumping off sides and why do they, I don't know. I may have to put a moratorium on those questions until they just stop doing it. Like I share your frustration. It sucks. It's awful. It's infuriating and it's offensive. I don't know what the fix is. So, But I want to be balanced here, though, as negative as everybody is. I think the negativity is, man, they could just look so much more impressive. The fact of the matter is they're 3-1. Hey, this is a big one this weekend, this coming Sunday against the Bills. Like, this is a team that if you play the way you did in the last three games, you will get blown out like you did against Minnesota. If we're coming in Monday and that's what we're talking about, then that's a problem. And yet they'll still be above 500 if that's the case at 3-2. So it's just, it's been a weird year. It's been a weird year all around the NFL. Joe Q is in. He says, is it possible that Juice Scruggs is the problem? What is his PFF grade and how does it compare to the rest of the O-line? I dislike Tunsil's posturing as much as you do, but center is the key position in both the run game and pass protection, and you have rightly called him a rookie center. The good news is that maybe there's upside as he gathers more experience. No question about that. Like, Juice Scruggs is, I think, only going to get better. I don't have his PFF grade only because PFF has a bad credit card for me. They've got an expired credit card. And when Seth read to me the QB grades off of PFF today during one of the breaks, I said I'm boycotting them for at least 1 week. When I heard that Derek Carr has the highest PFF grade of any quarterback and that CJ Stroud is 14th. I need that disparity to at least look a little more like what the real eye test looks like before I give you my $129.99 or whatever the fuck it is, PFF. I like PFF. I like things that are quantified. I like numbers. You know what I mean? I wish, yeah, you know, like I wish... Let me just say my life would be a whole lot easier if I could just, if I was introduced to people and I could just go, yeah, no, he's a 98.2 as a person. That would make it a lot easier for me. I know they're doing that over in China and the social score and everything like that. And that's bad. And I get all that, but it would really make my life a lot easier if everybody just had a score and I could be like, oh, really? Oh, this guy's a dipshit. He's a 62.1. Okay, good. I just won't return his call. That would save me a lot of time, I tell you right now. So anyways, I say all that to say that that Juice Scruggs is, yes, he is part. I don't know if he's the problem. But he's part of the problem. The interior of that offensive line is absolutely a problem right now. I'm still confident in Juice Scruggs. I'm still confident in Kenyon Green, although he's done his best to wither away at that the last few weeks. Scruggs ain't going anywhere. Like, that's our starting center here for this season and probably next season, and they're going to roll with it. So there you go. Appreciate you, Joe Q, as always. Ben emails in. He says, hey, Sean, we have 4 weeks in the books, so we have a good feel for how the team wants to operate. My primary issue is the lack of plays designed to push the ball down the field. Most of the big plays seem to be from broken plays where CJ finds Nico after scrambling a bit. Just seems like with the weapons they have, there should be more designed big play opportunities. Let CJ air it out. It's what he does best. It's easier said than done, Ben. The teams are doing their best, and this isn't just the Texans thing, although the Texans are certainly catching their fair share of it. But the league as a whole is playing a lot more deep zone coverages and not letting teams air it out and beat them over the top. It's what had Mel Kiper blathering on TV about banning cover two as a package and bringing safeties up closer to the line of scrimmage. Some of the lack of big plays to push down the field is they're not available down there. So CJ's having to do the quote unquote boring stuff. I agree with your sentiment, especially in this last game where, man, it felt like a lot of the plays they had, particularly the productive plays, were done off script with a scramble going on, not the way they drew it up. And those are the moments where I just say, thank God we have CJ Stroud. That's it. When CJ breaks the pocket, when he gets clutter in the pocket and he gets flushed out and he rolls to his right, I almost feel like whatever's going to happen with him rolling to his right is better than whatever the play was originally designed to do. He's just that good at finding guys, and he's remarkable, man. And so is Nico. Both of them are. They're really incredible. All right, Lorenzo says, I had an interesting observation during the game when Fisher and Lorenzo, I'll be the judge and see how interesting your observation is. Okay. I'm just joking. When Fisher came in for Tunsil, he seemed to do okay for his limited number of snaps. And when Tunsil came back in, it seems like he started playing with a little more intent than he normally plays with. And if I remember, he only had the holding penalty after that. He had two holding penalties after that. That's me saying that. Continuing with the email, it got me thinking that maybe what would really help send the message home about the penalties is bench Tunsil for Fisher during a game if he continues to commit stupid penalties, if only to knock Tunsil down a peg or two. Is it just me, or is that a genuine observation? Thanks, Sean. Keep up the awesome work. No, I mean, there's plenty of people that want to see Tunsil get knocked down a peg or two. And if that means benching him or semi-benching him, there's a lot of people. It's not just you, Lorenzo. There's a lot of people that want to see that. We got to keep in mind that it is C.J. Stroud that Laremy Tunsil is protecting. And for all the offsides and all the holding penalties and all the stupid shit that Laremy does sometimes, that, you know, 80 to 85% of it is good, particularly in pass protection. Like, he's a good player. Like, he's not making all these Pro Bowls by accident. There's a lot of good that comes with Laremy Tunsil. It's just that the bad is so, A, fixable, and B, frustrating because it's so fixable. So, I don't see D'Amico doing that. I don't know that it's responsible to do that. You could argue it's malpractice just to put a rookie left tackle in to send a message. And I know it's frustrating, man. But I almost feel like if D'Amico hasn't done it by now, when's he going to do it? You know, Laremy's we're four games in, and he's well on his way to shattering the record for false starts in a season. So I don't know what the breaking point is for D'Amico, but I'm guessing that whatever it is, he's got CJ Stroud in mind with that. Thank you for the email, Lorenzo. Jason and Leander. Oh, my wrestling guy is back. Hey, Sean, what did you think of the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix? My unsolicited take, it's good, but does not nearly live up to the hype, much like the 2024 Houston Texans, he says. Bravo, Jason. That was a good analogy. He says, Mr. Meh McMahon or Mech Man. Am I right? You're a dork. I love that. That's so funny. What did I think of the Mr. McMahon series on Netflix? I have only watched the first four episodes. I'll probably watch the last two tonight since the Astros play during the day. And Tuesday is a pretty dead night for television in this house. Well, for me, it is. I don't know. My wife's got 8 hours of shit she watches, it feels like, all the time. She's always got stuff on the DVR. There's no bigger TV junkie than Amy Francine Pendergast. But she does like the Mr. McMahon documentary, mostly because our friend Bruce Pritchard is in there the whole time. Bruce, he's my dude. He's one of my best buds. And Amy likes him too. We're very friendly with the Pritchards, the Pendergast. Pendergast and Pritchard households are very friendly. So I've enjoyed that part of the documentary. As far as the content itself, and now granted, I've only watched the first four episodes. My big question I have is, how in the hell do they jam in everything they still need to get in these last two episodes? Because I think chronologically where they left off in the fourth episode is still somewhere like in the late 90s. Like, they haven't even put WCW out of business yet in this thing. That we've seen hide nor hair of the XFL, let alone all the peccadillos that McMahon got into in the last few years. So how the company hasn't even gone public yet, I don't think, in this thing. And we've only got two episodes to wrap it up. I like it so far. I wish it was a little more Mr. McMahon and Vince McMahon centric, because I'm somebody who grew up watching the WWF back in the territory days. I grew up in that part of the country. So I was a kid. I was like 12 when Vince bought the company from his dad. I would love to have gotten more of that part of the history. I would love for it to be a little more biographical. For the most part, it's been like 75%. It's just like watching a documentary about the Attitude Era. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, or a documentary about the 80s and Hulk Hogan. You know, like, it's not been as centered around Vince McMahon as I would like it to be. So that's my feeling on it so far, Jason. But I like it. It's a good watch, and I'm definitely psyched to finish it. BK says, all right, so how did you hurt your elbow, Sean? I believe it was from beating the living hell out of Minnesota Twins fans who were unlucky enough to talk smack to the smack-off champion. By God, the bodies on the floor and the timeline were strewn all over the place. What BK is referring to is I came back at Minnesota Twin fans. Amy and I went to a couple Twins-Astros games in July, one of which included Twins fans sitting near me cheering Altuve getting hit practically in the face with a pitch. So I made a video after the game calling out Twins fans. I made a video the next day after the Twins beat the Astros saying that the Twins would never be more than an 84 win version of the Ratchet Brewers, which was a bold thing to do because they were on pace for like 93 wins at the time and the Astros had just gotten destroyed. Turns out I was actually giving the Twins too much credit. They won 82 games this year. So I went back on social media and just went Michael Corleone on everybody from Minnesota who replied to my videos and reminded them of what a chump bitch team that they have up there and how badly they suck, and that I will be there next year when the Astros are their opening day opponent. So come at me, bro. So how did I hurt my elbow, though? I don't know. I got an elbow infection. This is a football podcast, so people don't need to know my medicals. But yeah, it was a really bad elbow infection. It still kind of hurts. Popping some antibiotics, but I'm good. I'm good to go. I'm not going to skip any podcast episodes or anything like that. His question, BK has, coaches can control so much after a screwed up clock earlier in the season. I think D'Amico has been excellent in his clock management, especially against the Jags. Clearly, they learned from their situation. They refocused, leaving only 18 seconds, scoring the winning touchdown. I will say this about the clock management in the Jags game. I thought it was horseshit at the end of the half in the second quarter. I thought it was masterclass at the end of the game. I think D'Amico, and he's done this a couple times this season. I think he did it against Chicago as well. Just gets way too conservative. No, it might have been Indianapolis, but definitely the Jags game. He let the clock run down to like 30 seconds before using any timeouts, to me, was just malpractice. You can't leave the field kicking a field goal on second down. I think it might have been second and goal, with a timeout in your back pocket. That can't happen. That cannot, not when you've possessed the football for the previous 2.5 minutes. That can't be. So that to me was egregious, and I think that's symptomatic. I don't know what philosophically it is about D'Amico where he tends to, at least this season, attack the end of the half conservatively. Maybe some of it has to do with he just wants to make sure he gets points, and especially if they have the ball coming out at halftime, that may factor in. But I thought it was atrocious clock management at the end of the half. Conversely, I thought his clock management at the end of the game was beautiful. I thought it was great. I thought the plays they were calling, I thought the things that D'Amico or that CJ was taking the underneath stuff, running clock, they were running at just the right pace. When it got to about a minute left and they knew they were in field goal range, their next goal was to empty the satchel of timeouts that Jacksonville had left, so they ran a couple times. It was fortunate that Dare was able to get them into 3rd and 3 and not 3rd and 9, because then 3rd and 3, they convert to Schultz, who doesn't get into the end zone, but now Jacksonville's got no timeouts left. I just thought it was beautifully done at the end of the game, which makes the end of the half so frustrating. So, yeah, I think overall D'Amico is a very, very good game manager. I think he's good on the replays. I think his clock management for the first year and change of his coaching career has largely been very good. I don't know what the glitch is this season with the end of half stuff, though. And him letting the clock run down to 27 seconds, I think it was, before they used their first timeout at the end of the second quarter, like this was silly. So anyways, there you go. Appreciate the question, BK. Wale is in. How could Sims survive the kind of performance he had this past Sunday? Steven Sims. I don't, D'Amico's not a guy who's going to hair trigger cut somebody, I guess. I'm assuming he survived it. It's only Tuesday. You know, they're probably bringing guys in for tryouts, and one of them might be a kick returner. Who knows? If Steven Sims was trying to get fired, he could not have done a better job than he did on Sunday against the Jags. I'll just put it that way. So, yeah, could Steven Sims survive the kind of performance he had this past Sunday? Sure, he could. Guys have bad games. To me, the more disturbing thing than the muffed punt, which was highly disturbing, was the 15-yard penalty. Like, what are you doing? You're Steven Sims. Shut the fuck up. Stop. Don't do that. What could have possibly happened that set you off to where you got to go get a 15-yard penalty for your team? That was just stupid. So there you go. Wally's got a Tunsil question. I'm done with the Tunsil questions, guys. Sorry. I'm tired of Tunsil. Says in the locker room speech, I don't recall D'Amico handing out any game balls to any of the defenders. I thought they are the reason we were able to win the game. Without them holding it down that much in offensive mistakes, it might not have been a win. From what I've heard, other game balls do get handed out other than the ones that we see on the videos for the Texans on social media. So it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Azeez Al-Shaair or maybe Foley Fatakasi, because he's the one that had the big stop on Trevor Lawrence on the 4th and goal. So I think other guys probably wound up with game balls. I wouldn't worry about it too much. I don't think they're worried about it too much, but appreciate the observation. Wale, good to have you back in the mailbag. Chuck is in Denver. He says, I'll let everyone else ask the O-line and penalty questions. Good on you, Chuck. Good on you. I haven't watched the Bills much, but I know Josh Allen is an oak tree and runs like crazy. He's like a train once he gets moving. Do you think the Texans have a chance of keeping him in check, running with Petrie as a spy, or will he get trucked by a guy as big as Allen? I don't think they're going to spy on Josh Allen. There's mobile quarterbacks all over the league. So it's, you know, they didn't spy on Lamar Jackson that I remember, and there's nobody more mobile than that. So I just don't think that's part of, I just don't think that's part of what D'Amico is going to do. Again, to me, it goes back to keeping Josh Allen in the pocket. It's incumbent upon the defensive ends to be disciplined in their pass rush. Defensive tackles, same thing. Can't let him leak out. He's going to get a couple big plays like that. He's Josh Allen. He's just too good. But I don't think they're going to spy on him. Now, as far as Petrie getting trucked by a guy that big, I mean, physics are physics and all. I will say this. Petrie ain't scared. He likes hitting. So there's that. All right, let's keep it moving. We got a couple more left here. And you knew he'd show up. He is France in the North, who, by the way, is coming to town this week. Might be in town already. France, I owe you a text. Is this team showing their true colors of being incredibly undisciplined, giving up too many big plays, and having their weekly brain farts like Steven Sims did today? I am at the point now where I don't think this is who they are. Like, I don't think they're this undisciplined, like on the aggregate. Like, I don't think we're going to get 17 games of this. But I will say this, 4 games is enough for me to not back them in predicting them to win the game on Sunday anymore. I'm going to give you a little window. I'm picking the Bills on Sunday because 4 games, 3 games of all these penalties, 4 games of just allowing teams to either hang around or get blown out in the case of Minnesota is enough for me to just, I'm backing off picking the Texans in a game like Buffalo. Texans are a 1-point favorite. Bills open as a 2.5-point favorite, and then they got the doors blown off them by the Ravens, and apparently that moved a lot of people. But I'm going to be picking the Bills in this game. France in the North also says, do you feel after 4 games that they're still maybe scratching the surface of what their potential is, despite how tight the games have been? I think it's somewhere in between. Like, I don't like scratching the surface would imply that there is like 2 more levels to go to get to. There's definitely room for improvement. But they're 3-1. You know what I mean? Like they're 3-1. So they're still winning games. So yeah, I think they're somewhere in between what we've seen and, you know, like an elite 14 win team. Like I predicted 11-6 before the season. I feel just as good about them finishing 11-6 as I did before the season when I made that pick. France wants the regular Utopia listeners to know that he hopes to see you on Sunday. He and his family are coming in for the Bills game. He will have the red maple leaf on the side of his hat. So if any of you Utopia people are out there at the tailgates or running around or coming to see me and Seth at the pregame, and you see somebody with a maple leaf on the side of their hat, that person is France in the North, who will be in the South at that point, but he rules the North like Jon Snow. So if you see somebody walking around, I'm guessing there won't be many red maple leaf designs on the side of people's hats. If you see one, then scream France in the North. All right, last one. Last but not least, my man Chris in the ATL. At this point in the season, who do you think has a better chance of being part of the 2025 Houston Texans, Bobby Slowick or Stephon Diggs? I am going to say Bobby Slowick. I still think it's up in the air as to whether or not Bobby Slowick gets a head coaching job. He has not been able to put together a viable run game for more than a game here or a game there. I have thought all along that the Diggs-Texans relationship would be a one-year fling. I think that there are going to be teams out there that might overpay for Stephon Diggs. And again, this is a very, like, it's a really interesting either-or, Chris. It's a great question. In fact, I may bring that on the show too. Slowick or Diggs 2025. It's a really good question, but I would say Slowick. I don't feel strongly about it, but if I gun to my head, I would say Slowick. In that I think we could go another year where either he doesn't get a head coaching offer, or if the Texans do put a run game together, that maybe the jobs would open up. Kind of like what Ben Johnson has been doing with Detroit. Like, you got to wait for the right job. And I know D'Amico has that kind of advice for Bobby Slowick is make sure you're not just taking a job to take a job. Make sure it's the right job. So I'll say Slowick. I hope it's both. I hope it's both. Even with all the glitches with the offense and stuff, I still really like Bobby Slowick. I think Bobby Slowick is a good offensive coordinator. They just got to fix some things. Last one, Chris says, fun question for Sean. We're officially in fall. Where do you stand on pumpkin spice flavored drinks and food? It's not at the top of my list. I'm not circling the dates on the calendar where pumpkin spice latte becomes available at Starbucks, mostly because Starbucks is way too expensive regardless of what drink you're getting there. I'm a Dunkin' Donuts guy myself when it comes to coffee, and I am a Shipley's person when it comes to breakfast kolaches. Shipley's coffee is okay too, though. But I don't begrudge it. I don't make fun of it. My wife likes it. In fact, we went to the Hot Bagel Shop on Shepherd this weekend for breakfast. I'd never been. We've lived like a mile from it. I've never been. And this is like a New York bagel shop, like with sandwiches and all the different flavors of cream cheese that you can buy to bring home. Like it really is like you stepped into a New York kind of bagel deli shop kind of thing. It's really good. And so we bought a bunch of bagels to bring home, and my wife made sure like a third of them were pumpkin bagels. So she likes it. I'm not totally down with it, but I don't begrudge it. You go for it. You pumpkin spice people out there, you do you, all right? You do your thing. That's where I fall on it, Chris. Appreciate you as always. All right. So there you go. That is it. Mailbag in the books. Again, if you want to hit me with a mailbag, we've had it down at the bottom of the screen this whole time. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Quick subscribe too as well. Hit the subscribe button. And then you don't have to worry about tracking down the podcast. The podcast tracks you down. That's how it works with technology. All right. Preview episode coming later this week. And then hopefully a victorious recap following the Bills game on Sunday night here on the Utopia Football Podcast. So for my producer, Anthony Irwin, I am Sean Pendergast. We are done. We are out of time. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Appreciate you tuning in. See you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Wednesday, 6 a.m. Payne and Pendergast every day all week long. And I will see you on Sunday at 9 a.m. for Texans Countdown outside the stadium. And a little episode later this week as well for Utopia. We'll see you guys later. Have a great week.